Hi guys, welcome to another episode of the MHP podcast. Today we'll be talking about high versus low repetitions, internal and external hip rotation, as well as isometric training. To start it off, high reps versus low reps, is there a difference in the resulting muscle hypertrophy that you get from that training?
Yeah, so you should think about all the parameters that go into a training program, and they all play a role in the effect that's going to happen. So you can't really just go and move some weights around and expect to get the specific outcome that you're looking for. So it's important to take these things into account. Higher repetition work is going to lead to more tissue development. You can use the word hypertrophy, but even in the case of tendons and soft tissues and things, like that's what's gonna lay down tissue and just grow the amount of tissue that the amount and the size of the tissue that's there. So that plays a role in kind of like a general preparation period, because if you can grow the amount and size of the tissues and then you can layer strength on top of that, that's usually a very good approach. But also in an injured or atrophied tissue, something like post-surgery, I've like working with an ACL case, usually you get a leg that is half the size of the other one, and there's a lot of tissue that needs to be built up there to before you're even thinking about making sure strength is equal on each side. So that's where your high repetition, high volume work comes in. And it's very important, but then it can also play a role with like metabolic demands, because the endurance of a tissue can play a role too, depending on the sport and the situation and what maybe you're training for. So that's where those longer sets would come into play. On the other side of the spectrum is your lower rep, higher load, higher weight, kind of sets. That's where it's less about developing more tissue or bigger tissue and more about the tensile strength of the fibers, as well as developing the ability for the nervous system to generate a really, really heavy contraction in that area. So these two things, you can't look at them as like black and white, two separate things. They exist on a spectrum, and you're gonna develop muscular tissue training heavy with low reps, and you're gonna get stronger training higher rep, lower weight kind of things. But the adaptations are very split, and you can get very specific in your parameters in that way.
Yeah, and all this talk, it's kind of reminded me of the force velocity curve. I know you're aware of it, and I've learned it a bunch in school. And I remember that when we kind of started learning about high reps versus low reps, usually when something is higher rep, it's lower in weight, which means that you'll be able to build like more muscular endurance because you'll be able to go for longer. But then if it's lower reps, usually you up the weight, so then you are able to produce more power, like just like you said. But relating this kind of to a season, when would somebody include high or low reps in their program to maximize all these training results? So kind of comparing like off season, preseason, in season.
So in the off season, that's usually when you are going to be doing more of this high volume stuff. It depends kind of on the
Is it kind of less
phase.
risk? Like it's more less risk because you're not really playing, so you're able to load the system more.
It's a little bit of that. Like you can manage being a little bit fatigued from some of this higher volume work, but largely what it is it's a phase of non-specific training, because when you're in season, it's going to be very, the specificity is going to be very, very high. You're going to be training precisely for the traits and qualities that are required for the sport. And basically, if you look from off season to preseason and in season, specificity should be climbing steadily across. So starting from this low specificity phase, the goal is to develop kind of the sub traits that then will serve the more specific ones. So having bigger muscles doesn't actually serve the majority of sports.
Exactly.
But in a lot of athletes, it's not like they have massive muscles to begin with. So if you can put on a little bit of size, then when you transition into your strength and power phases that become closer to the end of the offseason and into the preseason, you have more muscle that can then generate that force.
Yeah.
And you're going to get more out of those strength phases than you would without that higher volume phase. So it's not just because it's not specific, it's not serving you. It's not just a blow it off for fun, kind of do whatever you want phase. It should have a very clear direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you should be thinking of it, is what needs to be built so that you get the most out of the next phase that's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, kind of relating this a little bit to hip rotation, I know that we talked about it last episode and how there's kind of this trend of athletes not really prioritizing their internal or external hip rotation work, even just body weight stuff. What is the importance of actually having a larger degree of motion, both internally and externally at the hip joint?
I would say that the most important one is when you understand that any hip movement involves rotation, then
because of the joint.
Correct. It's a ball in a socket. And
exactly.
If you even want to just lift your legs straight in front of you, there's a rotational component to that. Because basically, like, I forget who I stole this from, but I heard it somewhere else and I loved it. And it was basically like, linear movement doesn't exist. Anything that we do, so not only the fact that a ball and socket joint can't move in any direction without some rotation happening, but you also, if you strip everything down and look at the muscles that are creating the movement, it's not like you have a muscle perfectly aligned on the front to pull you directly upwards and then another one at 10 degrees to the side to pull you. Like, any movement you make is some combination of all of these curved lines of muscle tissue that are
exactly in the fibers.
Yeah, that are activating to different degrees to create different movements. So everything is kind of like a spiral in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the degree to what opposing muscles are pulling on which that you either go straight to the front or 10 degrees to the side, or, you know, so everything is rotation when you really get like granular with how the body moves. And I think the easiest thing is, like, people think, oh, if I feel my hip is tight when I squat, I need to do a lot of like pulling my knee to the chest and like things like that. When I've seen on top over anything like that, I've seen the most, not necessarily development, but like shock sitting into a squat of like, oh, that feels so much better when the rotational component is opened up. You open up a little bit of internal rotation and then retest a squat and people go, whoa, that feels much, much easier than it did before.
Yeah.
Because pulling your knee to your chest is kind of like the low resolution way to try to open up space. But if you get the capsule rotating more, that's like as deep into the hip as you can get without, taking a knife to it. So our ability from the outside, just moving to work deep, deep, deep tissues, that comes usually from the rotational stuff.
Mm-hmm. So would you say that a benefit of a stronger hip, both internally and externally, is the fact that you're able to have a larger workspace? Because you did mention that after, you know, that person did do that stretching, they were actually able to get into like a deeper range of motion.
100%. The FRC kind of philosophy is work internally to externally.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before, you should be worrying about the strength of your glute, you should be thinking about the hip capsule.
Mm-hmm.
And once, because last week we talked about the kind of the springing internal to external rotation of the hip that creates all that power. If you have a greater ability to rotate, that's a greater workspace to put force into and to create more power. So it's kind of the basis that should be addressed before anything else. And if there's limitations there, that's number one focus every single time.
Right. Yeah. And so if an athlete were to find a limitation in their hip rotation, what are one or two ways that this athlete can train that joint capsule?
So I'll give a thorough breakdown of how to do PALS and RAILS. Stands for it, the name doesn't really matter, but stands for progressive angular isometric loading and then regressive angular isometric loading. And what this does is it's not just a stretch. We're actually going to be applying strength and function into these positions. So I would look up a 90-90 stretch and
those are good.
Get a visual on that. If you turn towards the back leg, you're biasing internal rotation of the back leg. And then if you lean into the front leg, you're getting external rotation at the front leg. So you would flip positions to get both orientations on both legs.
Right.
And then obviously you can spend more time on whichever one, whichever direction needs a little bit more work. But what you would do is you would get into a stretch. So make sure you're feeling the tissues deep inside the hip are put on stretch. That's step number one. You would hold for 2 minutes. Now, I don't know if you've come across some of the stuff on how long it actually takes to change the length of a tissue. A 10, 20, 30 second stretch typically isn't doing anything.
Yeah, it's too fast.
Yeah, it takes a long time to change tissue. So what you need is a long stretch of at least 2 minutes so that the tissues have actually changed length. So now you have workspace for the hip that you didn't have before. And that's step one.
Okay.
Once you've done that, you're not moving anywhere. And then you're going to start to take your foot and push it into the ground. Nothing's actually moving. You're just exerting force this way to get the rotational contraction from deep inside
that
the hip.
Extra little space.
Yes. Because one, this is new workspace that you have. There's the thumbs up again.
Yeah.
Because this is new workspace that you haven't used before.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's relatively small, deep muscles, what you don't want to do is get in this position and then push as hard as you can. It's important that you have a ramp up period. So I like to cue people through once the stretch is done, you've held for 2 minutes, push into the floor at like 10% effort.
Right.
And then I'll go 25%, 50%, 70%. And then sometimes I'll put people through a phase of like, you stop at 75%, hold for 5 to 10 seconds. And then you could do a phase of 90% and then build to that 100% max effort contraction. Sometimes that's not always necessary, but if you want to play it safe, that would be the way to do it. But the goal is to eventually be doing 100% max effort push into the floor. Once that 5 to 10 second push is done, then you go immediately into the rails part, which is where you're trying to pull the foot away from the floor. The problem is to get this to move anymore would require more stretch through the hip, which shouldn't be available because it's already stretched as far as it can go. So this is the hardest part for a lot of people, is trying to contract the muscle as if you're trying to pull with nothing moving. Oftentimes that's where people cramp up, which is funny to see sometimes. That's normal, by the way, if it happens. It's just kind of part of the process sometimes. But you go right into a pull, 5 to 10 seconds, same idea. And then that's one set. In the early stages, that's enough. You can start to add rounds with time.
As
a progression.
Yeah.
The nice thing is you don't have to hold the 2 minute stretch every single time. You do it for set number one. And then if you say you do both legs, when you go back to the first leg, you can skip the stretch, go right into your push and your pull, your PALS and your rails. And then it's as simple as that.
Nice. Yeah. And, relating this a little bit to isometric training, because I feel like that stretch kind of reminded me of that. What is isometric training and what does it strengthen?
So anytime you hear isometric, it just means a static, not moving exercise. So you
Exactly.
hold a position, you stay there for time. Just like we were talking about with like when we started talking about high reps and low reps, this can be done exactly the same, where you can do a really long duration hold. Some people have recommended holds of up to 2 minutes for some really high volumes.
Yeah.
But you could also hold a really heavy weight and do a 3 to 10 second hold where you're putting a lot more force through the tissues. And you have the same spectrum of like high volume and high intensity that we talked about before. And it basically can be applied the same way. Usually the reason for its applications is tendon health. If you do especially the high volume versions, holding for 30 seconds a minute, 2 minutes plus, that can be very, very good for just the general health of the tendon. When it's getting impacted by really high velocity inputs like running and jumping, sprinting, all these different things, that can wear down a tendon. And this is kind of like the opposite end of the spectrum that can pull it towards a healthy kind of zone. Yeah. So sometimes I like to say, think of you want some slow stuff, and not moving counts as slow. It's the ultimate form of slow that balances out your fast stuff. If you're doing a lot of jumping, a lot of sprinting, you should have something in your program that takes into account the tendon health aspect. So that's your holds and your slow strength work.
Right. And so how can it be implemented in a training routine? Like, for example, if, you know, an athlete says that they have either ankle pain or knee pain, would you do this type of training before getting into a lift so you're actually able to load heavier? Or is it implemented in every single exercise?
Yeah, I like on a low day, like a recovery day, because the nice part about this is especially the long holds, they feel brutal. They'll hurt, they'll burn, they'll do all the things, but normally you don't get a lot of soreness afterwards. So it's a bit counterintuitive. So you could use a lot of isometrics on like a recovery day, where maybe it's not a day you'd be lifting very heavy anyways, but if you could go do a split squat iso hold for a few rounds of 30 seconds, usually your knees will thank you for that. And it's not really going to impact recovery and trainability the next day too much.
So this is also something that you could do then days leading up to a big tournament. For example, if you don't want to lift that heavy to tax your system, you could opt into doing the same exercises, but just doing them isometrically.
Absolutely. Another version of this that could be applied similarly to what you're talking about is the other end of the spectrum of the short duration, high force. And something I've used personally actually is what's sometimes called like a sprinter's isometric, where you basically load up a bar with a bunch of weight, and usually you need a lot because it's a pretty strong position. You set up with a bar on your back and you're on a bit of an angle, and then you go up on one leg, kind of like sprinter's pose, one knee's high, the other foot is back and up on the ball of the foot, heel is floating.
Yep.
You put a small bend in the knee, and then you just push into the bar as hard as you can. And the push generates from the calf, Achilles, foot area.
The tendons, yeah.
So it's a very, very potent, intense calf, Achilles, foot strengthener that you would do if it's actually a max effort push for very short durations, like 3-5 seconds. I've used those before and I really like them. And that's, it's another thing, if you kept the sets relatively low and the duration on maybe the lower end of that 3 seconds, it's not something, especially if it's not new to the program, because we've talked before about how a new stimulus, a new exercise, that's one of the factors that causes a lot of soreness and fatigue.
Right.
So as long as it's not a new thing in the program, it could be a good tool in the days leading up to a game, where you're going to get a potent strength stimulus without a lot of that fatigue and things like that.
Yeah, that's very true. Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you so much, guys, for joining in and listening to yet again another episode. Make sure to tune in for next week's, and we'll see you then.
See you next week.
Bye,
Have a
guys.
good one.